This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Laverne Baker is one of the rhythm and blues stars of the 50s and early 60s, about whom you might ask, where is she now? Well, the answer is, she's back in the States performing, and she's our guest today. Baker is one of Atlantic Records' first big success stories, with hits like Jim Dandy, Tweedledee Dee, and Bumblebee. And it was Atlantic Records that revived her career in 1988 by having her perform in their 40th anniversary celebration at Madison Square Garden. More recently, she performed in the Broadway R&B review Black and Blue, and she recorded a song for the Dick Tracy soundtrack. I'll let Laverne Baker explain where she was in the intervening 20 years after we hear this 1956 recording.
Jim Dandy to the rescue. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Go, Jim Dandy. Go, Jim Dandy. Jim Dandy on a mountain top. 30,000 feet to drop. Spider lady on a runaway horse. Aha, that's right, of course. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Go, Jim Dandy. Go, Jim Dandy. She was feeling a kind of blue. Jim Dandy is the kind of guy. Never liked to see a little girl cry. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Go, Jim Dandy. Go, Jim Dandy. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Jim Dandy to the rescue. Go, Jim Dandy. Go!
Laverne Baker, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, you just performed last weekend at the Village Gate, a club in New York. What did you sing? What's in your repertoire now?
Well, right now, the people are so interested in hearing my old recordings. So that's basically what I'm doing with a few other songs. But I'm putting my act together for California, which I will be doing other songs to show the versatility of my voice. You know, and things that I can do, which I would like to do here. But the people, I know, God bless them, they just want to hear what they like. So that's what I do here, is I do a few outsiders, you know. But basically, the act I'm doing now is from the 50s and all of my hits.
Now, in the 20 years or so that you weren't performing in the States, you were living in the Philippines?
Yes, I'm the show director for the United States Marine Corps. I'm still active in show business. I book all the shows in the club, and on Fridays and Saturdays, I sing myself. I do four sets on Friday, four sets on Saturday. And for the happy hour, you know, I laugh and talk with the guys, go around, you know. It makes them feel good and keeps up the morale. That is my job, to make everybody laugh and happy, and it has been very successful there.
What kind of other talent did you book for the shows?
Well, I booked all Filipino talent. And I had all the agents. I have a vast list of agents that I deal with by phone. And some of them, if they have the money, they come down. And we book whatever I think is suiting for the club. You know, if they've had too much singing, then I'll bring in like acrobats and tumblers and stuff like that. And if I think they've had too much of female, I'll bring in a mixed show, like the Philippine cultural dances and stuff like that. It's whatever I feel that we're needed, you know. And it's like if the ships are coming in, then I book the show full of beautiful girls because the guys don't want to see no guys, you know. So when the carriers are coming in, it's quite wild there. You know, we have sometime like 8,000 guys at one time, you know, in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to another one of your hit records from the 1950s before we talk some more. And why don't we listen to Bumblebee?
Oh, wow.
And, I think, you know, this is kind of a novelty record, but it's a wonderful recording.
Yes, I'm singing it now, and I feel so very, very funny singing that.
Why do you feel funny about it?
Well, because I was, you know, very, very young, and at the time it fitted me, you know. It was good, and I had a big hit with it with the kids, and... But now I'm much older. I feel funny singing it, you know, but I'll do it. You know, I do it. And I'm surprised that my voice can reach the squeaky part now. I still can do it. So I do it. You know, if someone asks for it, I'll do it.
So do you do it differently?
No, I do it the same. The same. I do all of my recordings identical, the same. Matter of fact, I have hired two backup singers to do the background so that the people will know, you know, what they heard before. It still sounds the same.
Okay, let's listen to Laverne Baker, and this is Bumblebee.
Shuck, shuck. more. Shout, shout. Shout. Shoo-wee, you hurt me like a bee.
A bumblebee, an evil bumblebee. Shout, shout. I gave you love as sweet as honey. Shout, shout. My life, my soul, and all my money. You didn't seem to realize shut, shut. You had a home in paradise.
Shoo-wee, you hurt me like a bee.
A bumblebee, an evil bumblebee. Don't you know I cry night after night? Just one kiss before you go. Don't ever come back no more. Now, baby, there's no need of crying. I'm sick and tired.
So my guest Laverne Baker is recorded in 1960. Now, Laverne Baker, you were born in Chicago, and you started performing in your teens.
Yes.
And when you started performing in clubs around Chicago, you were known as Little Miss Sharecropper. Who gave you that name?
Regretfully, yes. Some guy. Well, it was a long story. It's like at the big club, Delisa, which was the place during those early 40s, 50s in Chicago. And they had a singer there named Little Miss Cornshuck. And she was a great singer, and she used to come out with a little, like, Bo Peep outfit on, with a little basket, mm-hmm. ribbons in her hair. And she was, quite famous. Her name was the Talk of Chicago. And she got on the wrong path, you know, and wasn't able to perform. So then they were looking for someone to take her place. So I met this guy at another one of our big clubs. I had went to see the show, and I did a guest number. And he said, you know, they're looking for a good singer at Club Delisa. So I was a little nervous to go to the breakfast dance because I didn't have no business out that, you know, all night long at that during those years, you know, because the breakfast dance started at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I slipped and went anyway, and I got the job. And the next thing I knew, they had put these little costumes and ribbons and baskets in my hand, and they called me Little Miss Sharecropper because they couldn't use corn shuck. You know, and Sharecropper was related to that. But about 2 years after I left, I hurried up and got rid of it. So,
did you protest when they wanted to outfit you that way? And
no,
call you
I
that?
Didn't. You know, you got to get your foot in the door before you can say anything in regards to what you do. You know, I wasn't strong. I just wanted to get started, and I didn't care how, you know, as long as it was legit, you know. So they wanted me to sing. And hey, I enjoyed it for a while, you know. But then as I started to mature, you know, and I saw other singers, you know, looking so beautiful on stage, I didn't like it anymore.
Now, I want to read you a review from Variety. And this was from 1954, the year that you signed with Atlantic.
Wow.
And this is a review of you at the Apollo.
Oh, I see.
And the reviewer wrote, "She's a strong-voiced looker who embellishes her singing with movement and suggestiveness worthy of any grind artist. And while this goes well at the Apollo, she'll have to hold back in other situations." weird review, but I was wondering, you know, what were you doing in your act then, and did you have to change what you were doing
in
terms of emotions?
Yes. Yes. As you mature, you know, like for one-nighters and the Apollo, that was great, you know?
What were you doing?
I have a thing I do. I turn around and my behind moves, you know, and stuff like that. You know, I still can do it. You know, it's all muscle control type thing, you know. But the audience go crazy when you do this, you know, and the young audiences back then in rock and roll. And at that time, I was not playing sophisticated and big nightclubs. I was doing strictly one-nighters and theaters. So I had to stick to it. But, you know, as I got a little older, I wanted to change, and I did change. And I made it. I went to Basin Street East with Louis Armstrong more than one time, you know. And I played Vegas. And these are rooms and things that I could not get when I was in rock and roll. So I had to change my act, you see.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were one of the first black singers to cross over to a white teenage audience.
Yes.
In the 1950s. Was there a conscious attempt at Atlantic Records to give you a certain kind of material or to change your stage act in any way to help you cross over?
No. Atlantic always picked my music, Ahmed and Jerry at the time. They always picked, you know, the songs that they wanted me to sing or they thought that would be best for me. And I never argued. At that particular time, I'll fight now, But I didn't argue then. And because they knew what they wanted, you know. But coincidentally, the things that they gave me, I enjoyed doing at that time. So I gave my best at it, you know. And sometimes they would come in the studio and play different things and holler in the background, you know, to make it better, you know, sound like more people.
Did holler in the background on the record?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
record did they do that on?
Quite a few. They'd sing with the, we had the, at that time we had a group called, a backup group called the Q's. And a lot of things, he'd come in and he'd show them, he'd sing with them to show them what he wanted, you see. And this is the way we worked back then, you know. We had a small room and it was like they were on one side and we were on the other, and, you know. And we made millions of hits up there in that little hole that we were in.
Now, I want to play Tweedledee D, but, you know, the voices that come in at the beginning,
uh-huh.
they're kind of square-sounding voices, don't you think?
Yes, yeah. These are the cues. And one of the cues is the one that wrote Tweedledee, Mr. Winfield Scott. He's the one that wrote it. And that is the longest recording session I've ever had in my life.
What made it so long?
We did 52 takes.
Whoa, you're kidding.
No, I kid you not.
How come? What went wrong?
Well, he wasn't satisfied. It was something missing. And during the break, we know they always give us a little break for tea or whatever to rest our voices, you know. And I did, I was kidding with it, and I said, hump, be on, bump, bump, like that. And Ahmed said, that's it, that's it. That we, that's how that got in there. You know, it was just something missing that he wasn't. And he's like that now, you know. He's like that now. Everybody say he's still the same. If he's in a date and he's not comfortable, you know, he knows what he like, you know. And if he he don't hear it, he'll keep pushing, you know. So that's that with the Tweedledee session. It was very, very long.
Well, why don't we listen to Tweedledee? And this is my guest, Laverne Baker. This Laverne Baker is recorded in 1955, a song that went up to number 14 on the charts. Big hit for you. Now, how did you feel when you were given the song? Did you like the song?
Yes and no.
What was the yes and what was the no?
Well, because, you know, I told you we did so many takes. And it's it just didn't make any sense to me, okay? You know, and
but the lyric or the
yeah,
text?
The lyric, the yeah. lyric, the music was okay. We had to find the music to really fit it, you know. So I came up with a suggestion of Brazil. If you notice, it's
at the beginning, yeah,
yeah, dun 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 dun. So you know, and that's why I was so upset when Georgia Gibbs covered my record, because we worked very hard to stay away from the main track of Brazil, just a little taste of it, you know. And then she recorded my song word for word. I was very upset with this because she used my arrangement. Use your own arrangement, you know. That's what, that was the only kick, because once the song is PD, public domain, anybody can sing it, you know. I was really upset with the arrangement because we worked very hard on that.
Georgia Gibbs' cover of your record went up to number 2 on the charts.
I know. It was so many people had they thought they had the original and they didn't. They had hers.
Now, she was a white singer.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Recording your hit.
Yeah.
Were there stations that would play the white singer's version of it that wouldn't play yours?
Oh, yeah. And there were some of them that played hers, and after they found out she wasn't the original, they wouldn't play it anymore. You know, this happened in the whole state of Illinois and Michigan.
Did you play a lot of the rock and roll shows that were put together by Alan Freed and
yes,
Murray
I
McKay?
Did. Yeah.
What was it like to perform with those? Who were some of the people who shared the bill with you? And what,
oh, so
what,
many.
What was it? Yeah.
Oh, so many. I wish I had known you were going to ask me that. Let's see. The last show I did with Free, I think, was at the Brooklyn Paramount. It was Chuck Berry, and I got my eyes closed trying to remember this. It was Chuck Berry, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the Everly Brothers, Paul Anka, Screaming Jay Hawkins, Bill Doggett. Oh, quite a few. I can't remember them all.
What a show.
Yeah, he used to carry, we had two busloads full to capacity and maybe four cars all the time.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Laverne Baker, and she had a lot of hits in the 1950s, early 60s, songs like Tweedledee Dee, Bumblebee, Jim Dandy, I Cried a Tear, and she's back in the States after about 20 years, and performing again, and her hits have just been reissued on compact disc. We'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Laverne Baker is my guest. In the 1950s, you recorded an entire album of Bessie Smith songs.
Oh, I loved it. Now, that's a recording date I enjoyed. I really did enjoy it. I loved the songs. And after I listened to Bessie Smith, and even now that I'm older, when I do her numbers, I sound more like her, you know. I was told that by the bass player and some of the guys who actually worked with Bessie Smith that was still living, Atlantic got some of the original guys that played with her. You know, and they told me, said, man, you really sound like Bessie, you know. I just had one of those big growling voices, I guess, you know. And it's worse now that I'm older.
Well, it's a great album, and it was reissued recently on compact disc.
Yeah.
So let's play something off of it. This is the opening track, and this is Pigfoot.
Oh.
That sounds really terrific. Was Bessie Smith a big influence on you?
No. Let's say singers from that era did, you know. And then my mom and my grandmom, they were all gospel singers in church. So naturally I grew up in church, you know, that's where most of us come from, you know.
What was it like for you in the 60s when you stopped having hit records and when the kind of records making the pop charts were changing?
Well, I tell you what, I was a smart cookie. I left before it stopped. I realized it was getting slow, and I guess the good Lord was with me. My Asian tour came in right in the middle of that. And I said, well, let me get this, because in Asia, and you're playing the military bases, and they know you, you know, and at that time, you know, it was great, and I had a good show put together. So I really forgot all about it, you know.
This is what, a USO tour?
No, I don't do USO. I go over independently and by myself, you know. And I travel my tour went from Tokyo to Vietnam and back again to Guam.
So you're still living in the Philippines?
Yes, I still maintain my kids are there. But I'm going to go and close out my house and file my petition to get my baby out, because my baby is half-half. She's half Filipino and half American. So I have to go through quite a bit to get her papers ready to get her out of the Philippines. And then I will resign my post, because I still carry my contract and ID cards for the base. And then my mother wants me to come home. So I think I'll come home for whatever time God has for me left. I will spend it here in America.
Will you be recording again soon?
I pray so. Well, I just had a new release, which I'm grateful was released last Wednesday, a CD of all my, some of my old hits, released by Warner Atlantic. You know, they're together. And it's on sale here in New York now. I don't know about other cities, but you can get it. It's got Tweely D, I Cried a Tear, and so forth and so on. It's a reissue, you know, but it's on CD.
Great.
Uh-huh. But we're going to do some more, and I'm hoping to do some more recording. I have several offers, but I'm still holding out because I want to stay with Atlantic if I can. They're lucky for me, you know?
Yeah.
They have been very great for me, you know? So, but, you know, I don't mind. I want to try something of the new stuff, you know? If I can't make it, then I can't make it, but I would like to try. I'm the type, I'll try it, you know? I'm not a giver up. I fight, you know? And I want to make a rap record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I want to rap with something in my groove, you know, just to fight back with the youngsters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Laverne Baker, I thank you very much for talking with us. It's really been fun to hear from you. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank you very, very much. And you have a nice day.
Laverne Baker will perform at the Village Gate in New York the next 2 weekends. And she'll be in San Francisco and Los Angeles in April. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.